to do. So let's start here with me and you. Gonna take a little time. Let's see what we can find. Oh, come on, walk with me, talk with me, tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
And welcome to this edition of Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And I am your host, Richard Dugan. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time, and we broadcast live on the internet. We stream at richarddugan.com. That's RichardDugan.com. We archive these programs as well. The program we're about to do will be available probably about an hour and 15 minutes after this broadcast is over. So we hope that you will go to the website, richarddugan.com, go to the radio shows page, and listen to the programs that we've done over since September of 2007. Absolutely amazing. We've been doing it that long. Of course, I've been interviewing for 30 years and talking with people about some unbelievable, incredible, outstanding, spectacular ideas, fantastic concepts. The fact of the matter is that the people I've interviewed are thinking. They're trying to solve problems, give people choices that will help open their lives up to new ways of living and loving and learning. Speaking of learning, I had the privilege to speak before a group of college students last Tuesday night, and I shared with them, of course, my career. I shared with them the things that I do on a day-to-day basis and what we have available through the station that we're broadcasting on. And then I asked them some questions. And I have to tell you, not naming any names, of course, I don't want to embarrass anybody, but I asked some questions that had some simple answers, and they didn't know them. I'm thinking, college students, they don't know the answers to these simple questions. And so it begs the question, where is our educational system? We're going to find out a little bit about that and how our educational system, our level of knowledge and awareness, plays into our guests here on the program today. I also want to let you know about a special opportunity that you are going to be able to take advantage of by going to richarddugan.com and clicking on The Queue. What's that about? I want you to stay tuned because at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be visited by a very special guest, and he's going to be in studio to share with us what The Queue is all about. And if you're any kind of a Star Trek fan, it has nothing to do with that. So with that, we are going to jump into our program for today. Our guests, very special guests, I found out about them and their project only about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I said, I've got to have these folks on the program because, as you have heard me say time and time again, I know that there is another way to live. I don't know what it is, but I'm bound and determined to find it. I'm not saying this is it, but I will tell you it has a lot of the earmarks. My guests are Jacques Fresco, who is the visionary, the futurist, the architect behind the Venus Project, as well as his partner, Roxanne Meadows. And I want to welcome both of you to our program and to Tell Me Your Story. Thank you for taking time out of, I know, what has got to be a busy schedule to share with us the Venus Project. Thank you for coming on program.
Thanks. We appreciate the opportunity.
Yes, we do.
Now, I want to start with Jacques, with you, and I want to find out, can you give us in a synopsis, what is the Venus Project for those people who have, this is their first time hearing about it?
Okay. If you want to live in a world without war, without poverty, without loss of a job, and the eternal conflicts that arise every so many years, war. If you wish to really put an end to it, you have to redesign the culture. Anything less than that will repeat the same problems over and over again. What the Venus Project hopes to do is to make people aware of the conditions that shape our values and behavior. So if you don't want war, you have to declare all the Earth's resources as the common heritage of all the world's people. Then we have to eventually dissolve all the artificial boundaries that separate people. and share the Earth's resources and knowledge with all nations. That'll put an end to invasion territorial problems, and we also have to make things available without money. It's the monetary system that produces most of the aberrant behavior. We have enough resources now to take care of everyone on Earth. There's no shortage of anything. The proof of that is military systems. They give soldiers whatever they need to kill. We build submarines, killing machines, aircraft carriers. All soldiers are killing machines. All nations that utilize money are basically corrupt. And so it's not a question of holding up this country or another country. The question is, what are the conditions that produce war, hatred, jealousy, racism, greed? And the Venus Project's major concern is how to deal with problems, not talking about, it's not enough to criticize your country without offering a positive alternative. I know of no liberal, I know of no broadcasting company that talks of a method for solving these problems. The Venus Project provides methodology for solving problems.
Well, that's what we want to do on this program, is offer solutions for solving the problems of our day and time that seem to me to be repeated over and over again, generation after generation, century after century, since man has been here. And you are offering that opportunity. Where do you get your source information for redesigning our civilization?
Okay, I'm going to try to answer that. I got most of the ideas from the human body. Suppose the brain said, I do all the thinking. I want 90% of the nutrients. The lungs would say, if I don't oxygenate the blood, you couldn't operate as a brain. So the brain says to the lungs, what do you need? I need everything you need, access to the necessities of life. That goes for the kidneys. It goes for all the organs of the body. They get whatever they need. Any nation that is deprived of resources will invade the nearest country to retain their social structure. It's called sustainability. Whenever you hear that word, the question that I ask is sustainability for whom? The banks? Sustainability for free enterprise system? Sustainability for communism, socialism? What's this sustainability supposed to be applied toward? Well, I'm talking about the whole world. If we don't deal with the earth, take care of the earth, the oceans, don't dump toxic materials in, don't destroy the forest, we need that. Human beings are not separate from nature. They're a part of nature. And if you destroy nature, you destroy life as we know it.
What is...
I got the ideas from the human body.
From the human body. Now that's interesting. So if someone were to come to you and say, well, you know, Jacques, you're skirting, if not jumping, right in the middle of a concept we like to call socialism and redistributing of the wealth and the resources, et cetera, et cetera. How do you address something like that?
There's nothing in common with socialism, communism, fascism, or the free enterprise system. Communism has money, banks. It uses armies, navies. It has social stratification. It has police and prisons. We don't have any of that.
Okay.
Socialism's main concern is labor. Our main concern is the human race on Earth.
Well, it sounds to me like you are offering us, and I say this in with not only all due respect, but also with a very positive spin on this, you're offering us as close to a utopian society as is possible.
Well, let me put it this way. We are not utopian because I don't accept the idea of any final frontiers. If I were to design a city, the best I know how to design up to now, it would be a straitjacket for the kids of the future. They'll design their own cities. There are no final frontiers, no best laptop you can design. It's the best you can design up to now with what we know. The future has no limitations.
Now,
what we're proposing is not a utopia, but a society that's ever changing and growing and improving. This the society that we have today is an established society. We're talking about an emergent society. There are no utopias. That's a naive concept, really.
Okay.
Now, you can't arrive at anything and fix it.
Right.
And always stay that way. Because everything's changing. Everything's improving.
So, basically, we're talking about an evolving society. Is that a fair word to use?
Yes, we're talking about a society that is based on the methods of science applied to the social system, not on scientists ruling things or telling people what to do, but the methods of science. Really, science, when you want something done, if you want a bridge built, you don't go to metaphysicians or you don't go to politicians, or you go to people who are scientific in that area, and that's what we're talking about.
I have to say that I was very intrigued, of course, by the imagery that I see at the website, thevenusproject.com, and that certainly got my attention because I'm very much interested in a better future. I wish it was here today. When I was taking a futurist course back at Phoenix College back in the late 1970s, early 80s, we studied another gentleman by the name of Paulo Solari, who created the Arcosanti Project in the Cortes Junction, Arizona. And I had not heard of, and it didn't come up, this Venus Project. This has been around for 40 years, hasn't it? And it seems like I've been under a rock somewhere because I've only now come upon you folks. But this has been out there for years. Say again?
Let me describe some of the limitations of today's value system.
Okay.
Our language is very old. It was designed hundreds of years ago. So in America, we speak a kind of a butched English. And in America, the values, a language that was designed a long time ago, does not fit conditions today. Politicians are people that are lawyers, maybe some of them are sincere and good, but most of them are basically bought out by the establishment. I would say that no politician has any answers to any problems because they don't understand that much about technology. When I use the term technology, I want to tell you what I mean by it. I mean, when a man looks out of an airplane in the old days, he used to guess at his elevation. He'd say, I'm about a mile high. With Doppler radar, you get exactly how high you are. No human can do that.
Mm-hmm.
No human can estimate the distance of the planets without mathematics or without radiant energy that we bounce off the stars and we get the distance. No human can do that. About 10 months ago, computers were able to handle 1,000 trillion bits of information per second. No group of humans can do that. Managing the Earth today is a highly technical problem and cannot be done through politics. Politics are based on opinions, not research. So if you really want a world that can survive, you have to base it on not opinions, not the viewpoints of various politicians. What you base it on is the carrying capacity of the Earth. If you do a survey first, find out how much arable land area we have, how much technology we have, the kind of industrial plants, the schools, the books, the diseases that people have. After a comprehensive study, we can then design the parameters of the new social system. Without that study, if you don't understand me, if you have a population that exceeds the carrying capacity of a given environment, you're going to have problems such as crime, territorial invasion, patriotism. All those disorders are products of scarcity.
But your plan allows for the abundant resources that there are to be not actually redistributed, but reallocated in the fashion that they belong to everyone, not just to a select few to distribute.
Yes, that's true.
Let me ask you a question. I want to get into some other areas here, too, but let me ask you, About, I'm sure you're familiar with the statistics amongst lottery winners. Let's say the lottery winner is a person who's making $25,000-$30,000 a year, and he wins $500 million. Statistics have shown that within 1 year, that person is right back where they started from economically. They went through the $500 million in 1 year. It's gone, and now they're back to the 9-to-5er, eking out their own existence. They say that it's because that person does not have the capacity, has not learned how to handle that kind of wealth. How do you train someone who does not grasp the concepts that you're talking about?
I think I understand your question.
How do you retrain someone? How do you reprogram someone, so to speak? And I don't want to use that word. It's a bad word.
You can't do it in the present system because the value system enables us to talk not to one another, but we talk at each other.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try to tell you what that means. We don't talk to one another, we talk at each other. Talking to one another, you'd have to have common values. When you open the Bible, and there are statements in the Bible, all kinds of ideas, and some people say, well, this is what Jesus meant. Another person says, you're wrong. He meant this. And the third person says, you're both wrong. He meant that. That's why you have the Lutheran, the Seventh-day Adventists, the Jumpers for Jesus, the Catholics. You have that because the Bible is subject to interpretation. So there are languages that are not subject to interpretation, and that's what's needed very badly in the world today. The language that's not subject to interpretation is chemistry, mathematics, engineering, physics, biology. All of these have a common meaning to people trained in the sciences. If you design a bridge, and if the information on the blueprint was subject to interpretation, you couldn't build a bridge.
Okay.
When engineers talk to each other, they don't say, believe me, this metal is very strong. They give the tensile strength, compression strength, torsion, you understand?
Right.
They give figures so they understand each other. Our language today is nowhere near sane.
Well, let me put this to you then, because I really do want to understand how we're going to do this. The science has been used to both support and then denounce this whole concept of global warming and climate change, and that there are those who say that, hey, this is the cycle the planet goes through every so many hundreds of thousands of years, and then there are others who say man did this, and they're using science. What's wrong with this picture? Help me to understand why that's not what you're talking about.
No, not at all.
Right. Today, everything really is bought out. Within a monetary system, everything becomes corrupt. You can't tell when they do a science research program who paid for it, what was their outcome, what are they trying to sell, what's the motive behind it. And whenever money's in the situation, you can't tell if science is real or not. You can't tell anything if anything's real. Say somebody needs to have it, the doctor says they have to have a kidney out. Do they really need to have a kidney out, or does a doctor need to pay off a boat or a mortgage? You know, everything is really bastardized, and we're all prostitutes in this system. So when you get money out of the scenario, and to have anything real and not corrupt in a society that works for everyone, you have to get money out of the picture. And today, our social system was designed hundreds of years ago, but our technology is racing forward, so that we have the ability with our technology to produce abundance all over the world. Not, you know, a lot of people say that we don't have the resources, and they look at it the way we do things today, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about using science and technology and our resources wisely with environmental protection and for the benefit of everyone.
Okay.
So we really do have enough resources if we design things differently and we organize differently.
And so if I'm...
For example, soldiers are killing machines.
Mm-hmm.
We would take soldiers in the future, send them back to school so they wouldn't have to pay anything for it, and become problem solvers. Imagine the kind of world you have if soldiers were trained to solve problems. For example, when you drive a car, you see a sign, drive carefully, slippery when wet.
Mm-hmm.
We will put abrasive in the highway so it's not slippery when wet. No more lip service. No more laws made by man. Only natural law. If you don't get enough sleep, nutritious food, you get sick. Man-made laws, most of them, are to control people. They have nothing to do with reality.
I am extremely elated and excited about your concepts and what you have to share with us. And what I want to do in the second half of our program is I want to talk more about some specifics and how and when we can begin to start seeing a change towards this kind of civilization. That's really where we really want to go. See, you know, how can we start practically preparing?
Sure, you have to frame the question.
I certainly
you
will.
Frame the question, I will try to answer it.
All right. And we are talking with Jacques Fresco, and we're also talking with Roxanne Meadows, and they are with the Venus Project. And the Venus Project is, you have to go to the website and you have to read the materials. I rarely say have to, but if you want to understand more of what these two are talking about and sharing, that they've been sharing for, am I correct, some 40 years you've been getting that, trying to get this message out?
Jacques is 90, well, as we mentioned, he's going to be 94 in a couple weeks. He's been working on this probably most of his life. He went through the Great Depression in 1929, and that's when he started this venture to arriving at the Venus Project. So he's been working at it some 70 years, and I've been working with him for 34 years.
Okay, well, we're going to talk more about that as well, because I want to find out what the catalyst was that put the bee in Jacques' bonnet, as it were, to move on this and to start designing. And you even have a physical Venus Project that you have out in Florida, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
We have a research center here, 21 and a half acres and 10 buildings that we built.
Well, we're going to talk about that as well as we continue. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. New paradigms for a new world. It's giving you choices. This is one incredible choice. But we're, again, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And for just a couple of moments, we're going to take a pause in our interview here on this Saturday. We're going to talk with Jacob Wong, and he is the creator of not so much a new game per se, because this game has been around for several thousand years,
right,
but it is a new deck of cards that is creating, shall we call it, an offshoot of this 2,000 or 3,000-year-old game. We're talking about not only the game, but an opportunity for you, the listener, to participate, to play this game, to learn this game through the month of February, and possibly qualify for a tournament in March that could win you some great prizes, as well as benefit a wonderful organization in Santa Barbara, the Visiting Nurse Service, the Visiting Nurse and Hospice Care of Santa Barbara.
Right.
We're talking about Q Mahjong, and that's QMAHJONGG.com. We're going to make it easy for you. At RichardDugan.com, there's going to be a Q on the homepage. All you have to do is click it, and away you go. Jacob, first of all, welcome to Tell Me Your Story. Thank you for sharing about this dragon deck of cards, which you created a few years ago, and now you've created this game called Q Mahjong. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, basically, the Q Mahjong, this new card game, is a reformulation of the old, we call it the Mahjong tile game. But that game is now completely out of our modern-day living kind of a scenario, because it takes too long.
Right.
It's noisy and all that good stuff. But now if you play the game, basically the same game with a deck of cards, things are different.
Right.
The game came much faster, and that's one of the main reasons why we do this. So introducing a new card game.
That's kind of exciting, because there aren't a lot of new games that are coming out. And not only can you play this with an actual deck of the dragon cards, and it's 52, just like the standard U.S. deck with the
Correct.
Hearts and the spades and so forth. But you can learn to play this game online or on your touchpad, is that right?
No, on the iPhone.
On the iPhone.
iPhone or the iPod Touch.
Okay.
You can also play there too, but you have to download.
Okay.
You have to download the Q Mahjong game before you can play
it. Is there a charge for it?
No, it's all free.
Okay. So you can either go to qmahjong.com or click on the Q at richarddugan.com. You go, you learn how to play the game.
Right.
Once you've learned how to play it, and say, hey, I like this. This is a lot of fun. There is a tournament that's coming up in March.
Okay? Correct.
But you have to qualify. And in order to qualify, you have to then register at qmahjong.com, and then you play, and then the top 64 scores through February 28th. Yep. So there's only 2 weeks left.
Right.
They go to the tournament.
Right.
So you need to get online right away.
All free.
You and don't have to, there's no charge.
No charge.
When you register, all you do is you give your name and email address, and that lets you in to play to start accumulating points.
Right. Now, the Qmahjong website, actually, you can learn a new game. It's extremely well taught at the site, and you'll really enjoy it.
Now, as we speak, there's a tutorial, and it's predominantly right now, it's audio, but there is a video that's coming.
Correct.
Okay.
Now, we actually intend to hold more of these competitions and tournaments in the future.
Right.
Reason for that is, Richard, you mentioned about the fact that we want more people, whether they are college students, even high school students or senior students, it help their mental capacity when you play this interesting, very exciting game.
And we can certainly use that in this day and age.
Yep.
Absolutely. All right. One more time, let our listeners know that you can go to you can either go straight to qmahjong.com, which is qmahjong.com, or you go to richarddugan.com, click on the Q, boom, takes you right there. Learn to play the game. You like it? Register. Start accumulating points. You only have till the 28th of this month, of February, and the top 64 will be notified by email.
Correct.
And then invited to the tournament on the 20th at the Elks Lodge in Santa Barbara, and that's the Elks Lodge 613, and the address is 150 North Kellogg Avenue in Santa Barbara.
Right.
And this all is benefiting the Visiting Nurse and Hospice of Santa Barbara.
Correct.
Fantastic. Well, Jacob, we're going to have you back next week to tell us more, and we look forward to that.
Thank you very much.
And this is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, and we're talking with the Venus Project people, and they are the founder, if you will, the visionary, the brainchild, I'll call him. I don't care if he is 94. He's the brainchild of the Venus Project, and his partner, Roxanne Meadows, and Jacques Fresco. Jacques Fresco is my guest, and we want to jump back into our dialogue here with you and talk about how this all began. As Roxanne mentioned, you went through the Depression. My parents went through to the Depression as well. Of course, my dad's still just this side of 80, but nonetheless, I'm sure that he remembers as a child growing up and the difficulties. But what was it that hit you that said, I'm going to come up with something different that's going to work? And when was that and what was that?
Well, first I'd like to say that in my area in New York City, 15 million people were unemployed. And they bought houses and cars, but the banks failed. I'm sure you know about that.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have the money. They had the money in the bank, but when it failed, they never were able to get their money. So what happened, they were sleeping in every empty lot, 15 million people. At that time, I went to Washington, D.C., and there were thousands of veterans there in their uniform. I'm talking about the veterans of World War One. They were in their uniform, and the government promised them $600 when they got out of the Army to start life anew. But the government didn't have the money at that time to give them. So they were sleeping in every empty lot, thousands of veterans. And the senators didn't like that one bit. So they said to Douglas MacArthur, who was a captain then, they said, get them out of here. It just doesn't look good. So Douglas MacArthur tried to get them out of there, and they wouldn't leave until they got their bonuses. So he ordered the Army to throw tear gas at the veterans. That bothered me a great deal. I began to think, gee, here these people put their lives up to defend the country. That happens in World War II. People put their lives up to defend the country. Therefore, in times of war, we should have total conscription of men, machines, material, and money. So no one makes a buck out of war. No one makes profit out of war. Then it's real. War has always been big business. You sell machine guns, submarines for $1 billion apiece, aircraft carriers, and every time planes are shot down, you sell new planes. You got Boeing, Douglas Aircraft Company, they make billions out of war. I'm saying this again. If war is real, you should have total conscription of all the war machine manufacturers so they don't make a buck out of war, so that the basis of pay is the same as soldiers. If they put their lives up for the country, we don't want profiteering in war. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely do, yes.
Okay. They also used to ask you to buy war bonds during World War II. They said that brings Johnny home faster. Well, why not conscript all the money and bring Johnny home? Johnny home as fast as you can. If he puts up his life for you and the country, we can't have profiteering, a private game. That's what I mean by war is basically corrupt. Mm-hmm. It does not deal with anything. It just flattens out a lot of cities. When you consider World War II, we flattened out Germany. England was flattened out. And all the lives lost, 400 ships at sea, under the water with manganese, tungsten, iron. If you added up the cost of World War II, it could have wiped out the slums all over the world, built hospitals and schools all over the world. How stupid can you be? That politicians, all of them, I don't care what you, socialists, communists, Democrats, Republicans, are totally incompetent. And they don't know how to solve problems. They really don't.
They're there to keep things as they are, no matter how much they talk about change. They're there to keep things as they are, not to change things. They really don't know what to do. If you ask them how you make a bridge, they don't know. If you ask them how to make a higher yield per acre, they don't know. If you ask them how to make cars that don't hit anything, they don't know. So what are they doing up there? You know, why do you have to write your congressmen? If they knew something, you wouldn't have to write them.
They should be at the forefront of technology. They tell you if you want women's rights, write to your congressman. Well, who are these jackasses that you have to write to? When you fly in an airplane, you don't have to write to the pilot and say you've been flying at an angle for a half an hour, straighten up. He knows his business.
Mm-hmm.
Who are these people in Washington that you have to write to?
So we can't turn to the folks in Washington. So who do we turn to?
Okay. This is a brand new system. And Peter Joseph, the guy that started the Zeitgeist movement, he said 50 million people now know about the Venus Project. So we are being now invited all over the world to present the Venus Project. We've already been to China, Dubai. We've been to many countries, and the list is growing rapidly. And magazines all over the world are now spreading the Venus Project. It's very well known, except in the United States.
What got us known worldwide was Peter Joseph's second film called Zeitgeist Addendum. His first film introduced different concepts that they really don't talk about, and it became the most watched major documentary in the history of the Internet. And so people said, well, where do we go? What do we do? Where do we go in the future? And he didn't have any answers. So I sent him Jacques Fresco's book, The Best That Money Can't Buy. And he came out immediately, filmed, and then took a year and did his next film, Zeitgeist Addendum. You can see it for free on the Internet. And that's what introduced the Venus Project. So now Peter Joseph has done a movement called the Zeitgeist Movement, and that is he's dedicating all his time to introduce the Venus Project. The Zeitgeist Movement is the activist arm of the Venus Project, and there are 600 people signing up on the Zeitgeist Movement website every day from all around the world.
Can you give, for those of us who don't know the definition of the word Zeitgeist, what does that mean?
Well, it kind of means the style of our times, the meaning of our times, yes.
The way things are.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how do you overcome the resistance of the modern-day social structure, the institutions, to get your ideas across?
How do you overcome the resistance?
Through knowledge and information, just as any when the first scientists found out the Earth was round, they had to get the people, because most people believed it was flat, because you can see it's flat. So scientists had to explain to people how they determined the fact that the Earth was round. If you don't explain that to people, they haven't the tools to understand such concepts. So it's our job to make films, write books, produce articles, newspapers, radio, television, to get these ideas out to people so that they can understand the direction of the Venus Project. Most people project their own values into it. They project a bunch of scientists in gray telling people what to do. It's nothing like that at all. They get that from Hollywood, from books like 1984, Brave New World, Atlas Shrugged. They have nothing to do with the future. It's some artist's interpretation of what he thinks the future will be.
We're just introducing the possibilities of a workable future. You know, the activists today complain about the system, and people, you know, don't like the system and protest, but they offer no alternative direction. What they offer is trying to do patchwork in this system, maybe build what they call a sustainable city or a sustainable building or feed the poor in one deprived area. But we don't feel that that will take care of the problems, and it doesn't even address the root cause of the problems. They never do. They never address the monetary system and how that produces scarcity. You know, this system tries to keep things scarce because that props up prices. It's based on keeping things scarce. It's based on planned obsolescence. And, you know, it's always interesting when your warranty wears out. That's when you're right before the warranty wears out. That's when your product usually breaks down. That's all really calculated. So this system has a tremendous amount of waste. And we're introducing a very different system. So we encourage you to look at our website, thevenusproject.com. It's very difficult to talk about an entirely new system that's unrelated to anything else within an hour.
And it was quite a task even to take on, because reading all of the materials that you have there, along with the imagery and the videos, you know, it takes a couple of hours or more just to go through the website and really get a clear understanding. Hopefully people can walk away with that clear understanding of what you are proposing.
Right. And this isn't just wishes and aspirations of some dreamer. It's backed up technically. Jacques worked in the field technically. A lot of futures are not technical. And those that are, do not touch the social system. Because once you do that, you're really cast aside in the monetary system. You don't get fame and fortune. This is not something we're doing to get money. You'd go in a different business if that was the case.
Right.
You really generally get ostracized if you attack the system that you live under.
Yeah, I know. A satirist by the name of Stan Freberg did that back in the '60s with his form of humor towards the advertising industry, and nearly lost his career. So yeah, you have to be careful. Pick your battles very carefully. We're talking with the founder, the visionary, the brainchild of the Venus Project, Jacques Fresco, and his partner Roxanne Meadows. Roxanne, how did you get involved in this? Where were you 35 or so years ago that said, I've got to connect up with this guy and find out what he's doing and get involved and be a part of this? Why?
Well, I was introduced to some of his lectures on tape, and then I went right to his home where he was giving lectures 3 days a week, and I ended up renting a room, moving in, and he was teaching technical illustration, and I learned that from him, and then thought it was more interesting than anything I've ever heard. It made more sense, and started working towards this.
So, Jacques, you're going to be 94 in just a few weeks.
Yes.
Is there any aspect of your vision of the work that you've been doing for the last 50, 60, 70 years that you've seen come about that you can say, I can leave this world knowing that I've accomplished what?
No, I don't have those delusions. I know this. You do the best you can. If it happens, good. If it doesn't, it means you came at it too early. In other words, I'm not an idealist. I'm not a person who says, I'm here for a purpose. you just do the best you can. If it works, great. If it doesn't work, you learn why it doesn't work, and you modify it so it does work.
Okay.
That's the history of invention. It's nothing but mistakes. Let me just tell you a little bit about the system so you understand it better. People walk over to other people and they say things like, have a nice weekend. Why don't they say, have a nice life? Just a weekend? Don't you see? We're automatic. We say things that has no meaning. We pick it up from our environment. I'm going to tell you something that's going to bother a lot of people. But if you're brought up in an uneducated region of the South, you're going to grow up with a Southern accent. If somebody says to you, stop speaking with a Southern accent, you can't. That's the only thing you know. Now, if you're brought up in a particular region of the South, you might speak and say things like this. I'm going to give me a nigger and I'm going to kick his ass in. Is that that person speaking, or is that a reflection of the environment they come from?
Hmm.
Do you understand what I mean?
A product of their environment is what you're saying?
Yes, I'm saying environment shapes facial expressions, mannerisms, values, language, religion. Everything comes from the environment. Now, of course, if you're exposed to different environments, you'll become modified. But they say, well, people have choice. They can pick what they want. If you're brought up as a baby in Nazi Germany, all you hear is Heil Hitler, Deutschland über alles, Germany above all. You become a Nazi. There's no other alternatives available. If you're brought up in France, you speak with a French accent. If you were raised by the headhunters of the Amazon as a baby, you would be a headhunter. If I said to you, doesn't it bother you to have 10 shrunken heads? You say, yes, my brother has 20. Are you a bad person?
Yeah.
No, you reflect your culture. Now, in the ancient Rome, they used to feed Christians the lions. I'm sure you know about that.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they'd starve the lions for a week to put on a better show. And a whole family used to come weekends to see Christians being fed the lions. And the children would say, Daddy, can we come next week to see Christians being fed the lions? And Daddy might say, if you behave yourself.
Mm.
Now, are these kids mentally ill? No. They're reflecting their culture. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
You're not born with greed and bigotry and hatred and revenge. You pick it up in the environment from patterns from when we say the environment, we're talking about everything, nutrition, your schools, your parents, your friends, your teachers, what books you've read. Everything acts upon people.
That's reflective of a song from the 60s, how you must be carefully taught. And you're taught in many, many different ways, as you've just stated, through nutrition, through education, through all of these different elements. And sometimes we're not even aware of it.
Right. Unfortunately, what you're taught today in your schools is how to be a cog on a wheel, how to get a job. You're not taught a lot of different things. In the future, you'll be a generalist. You'll be taught many different things. So they think that there are scientists today. Scientists are used today. In the future, if you're a generalist, you couldn't make somebody make weapons without saying, well, why are we going to war with that other country? What is their side of the story?
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't do that if somebody was well-educated. So they use science today.
So is it my observation of the two of you that you have a fairly pessimistic view of the present, but a fairly optimistic view of the future?
I would say we have a realistic view of the present and propose something that may be workable if we can get this information and out. And it depends on not me and Jacques. We have no power and no money. It depends on how much other people understand about what we're talking about and try and implement it, try and get this value system out there. It's a totally new value system. You know, you've talked about Solari, but he didn't deal with the social system or the values that are promoted in this social system. We deal with the complete gamut of the whole social design.
Hmm. The totality of civilization. Is there any room for, in this concept, is there any room for I know there's room for individuality. I've seen that, and people can see that at the website, thevenusproject.com. But what about the inner life of the human being, the spiritual life, the soul aspect of the human life?
If you understand the Venus Project, there's no war, no poverty, no hunger, no killing, and people... Even murderers today, serial killers, are made that way by some warped portion of the environment that they come from. Either they're genetically damaged, and if they are, they belong in a hospital. And if they're indoctrinated with misinformation, they should not be judged. They should be helped out of that value system. Remember, if you were brought up in France, you'd get a lump in your throat when you see the French flag.
Mm-hmm.
If you're brought up in Nazi Germany, you get a lump in your throat when they see the swastika. An American might spit when he sees the swastika. The difference between a Nazi and an anti-Nazi is environment. It has nothing to do with free will or free choice. Your choice is always limited by what your environment offers, options are.
I think what we're advocating, if people look into it, they'll realize that we're trying to translate all the spiritual ideals and the religious aspirations into a working reality. It really becomes a verbal hobby in this system because you really can't implement those ideals. You might talk in a nice way in church, and then you have to go back out in the business world, and you can't act the way that you hope you will be able to act in the spiritual realm and the religious realm.
Mm-hmm.
But we're trying to make a society where people can act the way that their highest ideals that they're trying to aspire to.
Do you believe
that's in all human beings?
I'm sorry, say again.
We're trying to bring out the best in human beings and give them an environment where they can become productive and cooperative and creative.
Is it possible for us in this day, 2010, and this time period, to undo or change the environmental effects of our upbringing?
Yes, because we're getting letters now from all over the world, particularly on the internet, and asking questions, which is wonderful, because we want you to ask questions. We want you to criticize the system. This is how we learn. There's no areas that are forbidden.
People often ask us, you can't change human nature. Well, there's really no such thing as human nature. There's human behavior, and that's always been changed. Otherwise, you'd still be living in caves. So we can change the environment. But unfortunately, we feel that this system will probably have to crash before people begin to look for other ways of living. When I mean crash, I mean enough people have to become disillusioned with their government's ability to solve problems. And they'd have to lose their homes and lose their jobs. And this is what's beginning to happen all over the world. The system is not workable and it is crashing.
Well, I did have the privilege of speaking with a gentleman who's been involved with the music industry going way back into the 50s and early 60s and sharing his stories and his relationships with various major artists who made a global impact back then. And I asked him what he thought of the music industry, and he says, it's on the decline. The major corporations that are involved are billions of dollars in debt. And so it's like that area is just as susceptible as all of the other areas that we are seeing. But you see hope for the future.
Well, we do see hope for the future. Well, it just depends on what other people do.
Right.
We ask you to look at this direction. If you identify with it, then join with us and help us work toward it.
Try not to project your own values in what you think the Venus Project is. Look it up on the website, thevenusproject.com. There you've got hundreds of questions and answers about the Venus Project.
It sounds to me, and I've been to the website, and of course I've spoken with you, Roxanne, a little bit prior to the program. You're not pushing a book. You don't have CDs or movies to sell. You don't have subscriptions that people can buy into. You have an idea that you are sharing.
Yes, but we do have books and videos because for the last 34 years, there's been nobody who financed this. We financed everything we've done here. We built 10 buildings ourselves by hand. I did all the cement work. We bought the land. We made the models. Jacques designed the models, made the models. We bought the equipment to make videos. We feel that videos are the best ways to get this information out so it's not misinterpreted. So we financed this whole thing, and in order to continue making more products, we have to sell what we did, just like anybody else who lives in the monetary system. Although on our website, we have an awful lot for free.
Right.
We have free books. We have free videos. There's a lot out there for free.
And then if you feel called, you feel a tug at your brain strings, if you will, to continue to follow through and move forward in this endeavor with Jacques and Roxanne, then go to the website, send them an email, subscribe to, there's an ebook that's available, and you can read more about the Venus Project. Again, the website, thevenusproject.com. And, of course, we're linked as well at richarddugan.com. Just go there, go to the radio show's page following this program. The link will be there as well as the link to this interview. In the closing moments that we have, Jacques, what would be the final message, at least this time? Because I would love to have the two of you back to discuss this further. Again, it's hard to get into in just an hour. But a final message in this program to our listeners.
Final message?
Look into the Venus Project. Try not to judge it. And what we're trying to do is eliminate most of the problems, not by force, through education. We don't want to kill anybody. We're not against capitalism. Mm-hmm. We're in communism, socialism. All these are different attempts that have failed to this day to solve social problems. And so we've come up with something entirely different. So try not to compare it with some of the old values. Look it up first and then develop your questions.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to mention that Jacques and I are doing a world lecture tour for 2010. We'll be starting on March 18th, going down to Mexico. And then we have venues all over the world that people have set up that wanted to bring us out there. So on our home page, you can look that up.
And again, where that go ahead.
Date. Mm-hmm. I was just saying where we'll be and what dates.
Absolutely. And that's thevenusproject.com, thevenusproject.com. You can go there and check all of this out. It obviously has taken you many years to put this all together, Jacques, and it is a continuing work. It's not finished, and it never will be because we're not finished.
Right.
I want to thank both of you for joining us on the program today, and I wish you well in your endeavors, and we'll keep track and have you back on the program to discuss this further and to see where we are, and hopefully maybe we can see some movement in that direction. I mean, that's really what I was wanting to get to before is do you see any movement? I mean, even if it's just a little.
Tremendous amount. We have hundreds of thousands of people who have signed up for the Zeitgeist Movement page, which is the activist arm of the Venus Project, and all over the world. There's Z-Day, March 13th. We'll be in New York with this big symposium. And all over the world, they're holding Z-Day events. So there's a tremendous movement going on about the Venus Project in this direction.
Well, Roxanne and Jacques, again, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on Tell Me Your Story. And we will be in touch. And our best to you in your endeavors.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Richard, for the opportunity.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Join us next Saturday and every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time as we broadcast this program to you via the internet at richarddugan.com as well as on the radio. You can hear the archives at richarddugan.com radio show link, and that's where you're going to find all of the programs that we've done and links to our guests' websites, like today's The Venus Project with our guests, the visionary and futurist, the architect of The Venus Project, Jacques Fresco. I thank you for joining us. Love to Lal.